Well, I can remember as a kid anticipating Christmas time. There was a tree. Many of you have one. And presents. And Christmas carols. And they all reminded me that Christmas was coming. And it was exciting. And then Christmas came. And I was excited that day and feeling good. But in the back of my mind, I was dreading the day after Christmas. December 26th. When all the presents have been opened and the garbage is full of wrappers, and the tree just doesn't have that same glow that it has on Christmas Day. And my new toys would start to break very quickly because I was hard on stuff. So December 26th was perhaps the loneliest and saddest holiday of my year. What do you do the day after Christmas? Now, I'm not trying to put a damper on anyone's expectation, by the way. And it's not December 26th. I get that. But I want to also encourage you today because the Christmas story is not just about Christmas Day. It's about a lot more than that. It's about the day after as well. And the Christ, Jesus, does not just come on one day of the year, like Santa Claus, supposedly. He comes every day of the year and every season. So he's with you today. He's Lord of December. He's Lord of January. He's Lord of every season of life. And if your days following Christmas this year are a little bleak, a little hard, they were for Jesus as well. And he is still with you on December 26th. The Bible actually records the following day, the days following Christmas. And they're not very cheery. They're not very bright. Things are not calm. Things are not peaceful. Jesus had been born in Bethlehem, and the prophecies had come true. The Virgin Mary had given birth to this baby child, this baby King Jesus. And there they were in Bethlehem, getting used to being this family of three. So Matthew, the book of Matthew, introduces new characters in the story. Last week we looked at Simeon and Anna. This week we're going to look at a couple new characters in the Christmas story. The first is King Herod, and the other are the wise men from the east. Who was King Herod? King Herod, if you watch the movie called The Grinch, Herod is basically the Grinch. He's the guy trying to steal Christmas. That's who King Herod is. And he doesn't want anyone else happy. King Herod was a non-Jewish king. He was appointed by the Romans to be ruler over the Jews, but he was non-Jewish. So he was sort of a puppet king that the Romans hired to serve as the king of the Jews. King Herod was responsible for large building projects in the city, and he was a ruthless man. He was bloodthirsty. He was violent. He was cruel. And his approach to all that he did was to crush the competition and to take people down so he could be sort of elevated. So he's not excited at all about the coming of Jesus. A guy like that, a person like that, not really excited about Jesus coming. And we're going to get more to him in just a minute. But Matthew also introduces into the story wise men from the east. These were also non-Jews, non-Jewish people, most likely astrologers. And they made their living and they lived their life to sort of read the signs, read the stars, to come up with what will happen. What is the future events going to be? This is what they had done through their whole life. They tried to interpret future events. The Jewish people were not fond of this. They weren't fond of magi type people. They didn't like astrology like this and trying to read things, and they would not have approved of the way the magi live. This, of course, simply further confirms the fact that the wise men or magi were real people, because Matthew would not have made up people like this. They were real people. And the Bible has nothing to hide. And nothing to add to the story. The Bible is just simply history. It's just speaking for itself. The Magi were sincere in their quest to see Jesus. They really wanted to find him. And so naturally, their quest led them to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the city of kings. There have been, in fact, 40 kings, different kings, who had lived in Jerusalem in its history. Some for long, 10 years of time. Some for very short amounts of time. Some were very, very young, little boys, essentially, as kings. Some were aged kings. But everyone knew that kings live in Jerusalem. That's where you go to find the king. You go to Jerusalem. That's what the Magi knew, and that's why they went to Jerusalem. When a new president is sworn into office, he or she, so far I think it's been all he, moves into the White House with his family. Or, presidents live in D.C., governors live in the capital city of the state in which they govern. And kings of Israel, you know where they live? Jerusalem. That's where they go. They go to Jerusalem. But Jesus is not your normal king. He's not your typical king. He is not a normal king. He's the king from above. The king of the 40 kings. The king from another universe. He's the king to whom every knee will bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. But this king is going to look different than everyone expected. He's going to keep surprising people. You expect him to be this, and then he's not. You know, kings may have left their houses for a period of time to go to war, but Jesus, and then they go back home, but Jesus will never have a home. He'll never have a home. He'll leave his heavenly home and live here and never have a home here. He'll never have a throne to occupy. He's going to be on the front lines fighting for his people for as long as he's on planet Earth. That's the kind of king he's going to be. He's the new king who did not come to be served like every other king, but he came to serve us, the gospel, to get down and wash the dirty feet of the disciples and to continue to serve humanity, his grace and his love. So these wise men came to Jerusalem, the city of kings, looking for the king. Where is he? Here's the question they ask. Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. When Herod heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. So the birth of Jesus has done two things here. It has excited the seekers. It has lit a fire underneath people who are actually going after God. You know, the Christmas carols, the Christmas specials, you know, TV, they all whet the appetite for something beyond us, the knowledge of God. It excites interest in things otherworldly. And if you're a person who is seeking depth, something more than Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, as cool as that story is, or a cool gingerbread house, if you want more than that, Christmas is for you. It's deeper than that. Those are cool, fun things, but it goes way deeper than that. Christmas ignites spiritual curiosity. What is going on here? What is happening here? That's what the Magi are experiencing. Their imaginations are being lit up with, what is this? This is wonderful. This king born, where is he? I want to go find him. That's one effect that Jesus' birth has, to excite spiritual curiosity and interest in God. However, there's another effect of Jesus coming. It also draws to the surface idols in the heart, or either hidden or obvious. So the birth of Jesus, it stirs envy. It stirs pride. King Herod is all torn up about this, and he's ticked off by this news of this king. Why? Because Herod, at this point in his life, has just gotten so comfortable with his role as the phony king of the Jews, the fake king, the propped up one. He loves his role. And so in his world, there's no room for competition. He's good the way he is. His house and his life are put together. He's comfortable in his role as the phony king of Israel. And the coming of Jesus is about to dethrone him. It's going to dethrone his false perception of himself, and it's going to throw the status quo all out of whack. Herod's life is going to get turned upside down. You may experience something like this around Christmas time, a sort of loosening of order. Have you felt that this year yet? There's a lot to do. There's planning. There's get-togethers. There's a lot of Christmas gifts to buy. Christmas, what it does is it disrupts us. It disrupts our normal schedule. And you may be thinking, you know, to yourself, I just want things back to normal. I look forward to December 26th. I want things back to normal the way they were. It's too unsettled right now. Well, if that's you, be more like the Magi than King Herod. Don't think of the celebration of Jesus' birth as a disruption to your normal schedule. I know December's nuts. It is. But just roll with it. Don't think of it as a disruption to your normal schedule. Think of this season as an invitation to further explore the wonders of Christ. Let him shake, let the Lord shake things up a little bit. Let go of things for a little bit. It's okay. Embrace the mystery and the miracle of God coming to planet Earth. Life as usual is not the story of Christmas. New life, rebirth, is the story of Christmas. People who are already on the throne of their life find this kind of stuff threatening. People who are longing for God to occupy that throne of their life will see this as good tidings of great joy. This is the contrast. Herod's obsession with his own power will make him insecure in this and angry. The Magi's spiritual hunger will make them happy and satisfied and whole and becoming more whole in knowing this newborn Jesus. The news that the Magi brought Herod really caused Herod's heart to just drop into his stomach. You know, he's like, God is here? That's the idea. God is here? That was not the plan. And this really begins this sort of awful downward spiral for Herod into this further rage, further self-obsession, and even violence. And it's understandable because you look at what Herod had to deal with. The Magi do not call Jesus the one who will become king of the Jews. That's not what he says. He says the one born king of the Jews, the rightful king of the Jews, not the propped up one hired by the Romans like you, King Herod, the rightful born king of the Jews. He's king already. Nobody makes Jesus king. Nobody makes God God. He is already. And nobody can unmake Jesus king. We don't make Christ Lord. He's Lord already. Jesus comes from a pretty amazing line of kings. He comes from a line of David, who traces his line back to Judah and Jacob and Abraham. And this is the plan of God that has been in the making for thousands of years. And little King Herod is not going to stop this, no matter how much he wants to. God's plans cannot be altered. They're fixed in the heavens. That means that Herod's plan to stop Jesus from blessing the world won't work. It won't work, no matter how hard he tries. He's going to make some pretty violent attempts to do this. It won't work. And whatever we have in our life that we think might stop God from blessing you and blessing us or completing his work in you, those things will have no outcome on God's plan for your life. This is hopeful for us. The things that we think are obstacles in the way of God's plan, God will wipe away with just a thought and just with a word. God has plans for us, and they remain unspoiled, and they remain unfixed. We can't mess it up. Other people can't mess it up. What God wills will come to pass, no matter how dicey and scary and freaked out we're going to get in the process. But Herod is not going down without a fight. He wants to stop Jesus, but first he needs more answers. So he brings in the holier-than-thou super smart people. They were called the chief priests and the scribes. So he wants answers, and so they give him answers. You know, the coming of the king should not have been a surprise. It really shouldn't have been for those who have been looking for it. I mean, the Magi even knew about it. It had been planned from the beginning and predicted many times. Someone had to crush the serpent's head. Someone has to demolish death. Someone has to emerge as the great hero of the planet. It has to happen. Is it really any shock that the Creator would come and restore order and take out the bad guys, Satan and all the minions and demons? Not the cute minions, by the way, the demon minions. They are cute. You know, doesn't that make sense? It's like God is doing what all of us want him to do. That's really what's happening. Just people didn't realize it. But we see this desire all over the place. We want darkness to go. We want the good guys to win, the good gals to win. You want your favorite team to win, don't you? The big game on tonight. Who's going to win? Who's going to win all day? You want your team to win and take out the opposition. You want to beat the illness. You want to stay healthy and happy all your days. We all want that. Marvel Comics, they can't stop making movies about superheroes and you won't see a superhero movie where Superman dies. This is not going to happen. They always win in the end, no matter how crazy it gets. We all want to see goodness overwhelm badness. That's what we want. We want that in our deepest desire. Darkness overcoming the light. And God is doing that here. Where does that impulse come from? I think it comes from the great story of God. It comes from the great story of God. These are windows into the redemption story, and King Herod should have done his homework. He's not the hero of history. He's not the hero of the story. Jesus is the hero of history, the hero of the story. And Jesus has been born king, in a small town, in a neglected village, neglected community, and nothing can stop him from doing what he came to do. Spring had come, whether Herod liked it or not. And God is not just right in the beginning of the story, but he's right in the end of the story as well. You know, after December comes January, then comes February, then, you know, what comes after February? March, yeah, you guys know your months. But then something begins to happen toward the end of March. Then comes April and May, and these are the months of transition. And we go from the deep freeze that we're feeling right now to things starting to green up a little bit. As a kid, I always I considered winter over when the biggest snow pile in town had vanished. Then I knew, summer's coming. Winter, goodbye. And so when I was about 12 years old, they built a Walmart in town. And Walmart boasted the largest snow pile in the Brainerd Lakes area, in my opinion anyway. And so every day, me and my brothers would drive to school, and there would be that giant pile of snow in the Walmart parking lot. And I remember just thinking to myself, that thing's never going to melt. It's just going to be there forever. And it would have been there forever if the temperature hadn't risen. But slowly over time, as March gave way to April and May, that snow pile began to diminish until it was completely gone. That's what Christ's birth means. It means the end of an era. It means the temperature has gone up and things will begin to melt and disappear. Things that you thought would never leave will be gone. Maybe you got some frozen things in your life. You're wondering, like, will that ever leave? Will that ever be gone from my life? Yes, it will. Not by imagining it will or hoping it will, but simply by the presence of Jesus, his warmth, the temperature goes up. Christ's birth means the end of an era. Maybe not the season of winter, because here we are. We all chose to live here, more or less. So here we are. But the season of disorder and tyranny and false gods is gone from the life of the Christian. We can live in freedom, living under the good rule of our good King, the Lord Jesus. The era of tyranny and unpeace and disorder is over. It's being replaced by Jesus, the Prince of Peace. And this can happen for you as well and for me. This is what the holy super spiritual people tell King Herod. This is where Christ will be born. Verse 5, he says, they say, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. This is a quote from Micah 5, and Micah actually tells a little more about the shepherd ruler. He is, quote, his coming forth is from of old, from ancient days, and he shall stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall dwell secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he, this king, shall be their peace. So it's little King Herod, little microscopic King Herod, the snowflake in Phoenix in August, saying, I can do this, I can stop the winter from dissipating. It's little King Herod against the eternal king from of old, the king of kings, the king from above. Who's going to win? Who's going to win this contest? The good shepherd has come and he's reclaiming his people as his own. He's snatching them out of the hands of the bad shepherds, the phony kings. Who or what can stand in God's way? The answer is nobody. He is God. God is in the heavens, and now here he is on the earth in baby form. He does all that he pleases. That's our God. Behold our God. This is who he is. He does all that he wills. And no one can stop him. So what do you have in your life today that you think is the final straw, the thing that tilts the scales in the favor of the enemy, the phony little God, the phony little king or queen? I'm guessing you got a couple phony kings in your life, a couple phony queens in your life. And you think certain parts of you are just dominated by this sort of fake thing, this fake king, this fake queen. And you say, maybe you think, well, I got my finances put together, but, you know, my emotional life is a total wreck. Or my thought life. You know, it's just one roller coaster after the next. Or, yeah, I got my thought life put together pretty well, and my speech is pretty decent, but my extended family situation is a total mess. By the way, if you're living on the planet right now, your extended family situation probably is slightly messy. I'm just going to say that, and it's okay, all right? Maybe that's you, or maybe, you know, I got, you know, this or that put together, but now I'm retired, and now I don't know what the purpose of my life is or whatever it might be. And we tend to think that there's things in our life that are really, really good and we have control of, and then there's things over here that we don't have any control of, and this is compartmentalizing our life. That's not true. It's not the right way to think about stuff. Because we think of our lives as though we can control this, but we can't control that. And the coming of Jesus, it clarifies things for us. Because Jesus is King of all of us. All that we are, all that we have. Not just a part of us. Not like he owns this part, but this part over here is a total mess and someone else owns that. No. God gets the whole pie. He gets all of us, not just the slices. He's the King of our best. He's the King of our worst. Don't compartmentalize yourself. This is going well. That's going bad. No, it all belongs to God. God is working out his plan through all of these things, no matter how hard or good the situations may be. Now that Herod's blood pressure has gone through the roof and his stomach has dropped, or his heart has dropped into his stomach, he brings the wise men back, and he wants more answers. So he finds out what time the star had appeared. He does some quick math to determine, okay, how old might this child be? Now notice in the story, Herod does not dispute the birth of Jesus. He does not say, well, no, he wasn't born. That's not true, Magi. He doesn't dispute it at all. He accepts it completely. He knows it's true. He knows it's true. And so the warring in Herod's heart here, the war happening in Herod's heart, is in the heart and not in his head. Mentally, he accepts it. In his heart, he doesn't. Because accepting the birth of Christ is an action of the heart. It's receiving this. It's not an action of the head. Christ has come. That's indisputable. Has he come to you? Have you received him? Have you accepted him as your own Lord and as your own king? Or is there a phony king and queen sitting up there that needs to be dethroned? Jesus came, period. He was born king. He will come again, period. How does the heart take that news? Will it get hard? Will it get cold? Or will it soften and warm? Will it disrupt your put-together life? Or will you begin to see the coming of Jesus as freeing you up to abandon the pursuit of a put-together life in place of a life of faith and trust? Now, we spend a lot of our lives trying to put ourselves together, develop our resume, get order and structure to our life, to get put together. And Jesus comes and says, you know, you missed a couple things. You got a bad foundation. You're missing things. Let's start over again. He doesn't just come and kind of rearrange us and reorganize us. He puts us to, he remakes us. He recreates us. That's what he's doing. That's what he's done. And he does it in a very unassuming, unattractive way. He's born in a stable in Bethlehem. He leads this pretty quiet life till his 30s. Isaiah says that there was nothing in his appearance that would make us even desire him. He doesn't mandate that Christmas carols be written about him. Not like, come on, world, I'm here. Start writing songs about me. He doesn't do that. People want to do it anyway because he's that good. But he doesn't mandate it. Instead, the world cannot help itself. The world has to pour out praise with a God like this. The angels tell the shepherds about Jesus, and a good part of heaven just goes bananas. He's born, he's here, and the heavens erupt in worship. Thousands of people will leave their homes to go follow Jesus and not even bring a lunch with them as he goes through his ministry. And the words Merry Christmas do pour out of people's mouths before they can even think to say anything else. I think it's harder to not say Merry Christmas than it is to say Merry Christmas. It pours out of people's mouths. We want a good story. We want good news. We want a hero. And that's what Christmas is about. And this is why Jesus has come. Why is it so merry and bright? Why is this season so joy-filled? Because Jesus is here. He is God, and he's here. He's God in the flesh. He is what we want. He's who we long to know and be known by. He's not just the reason for the season. He's the Lord of the season. He's the Lord of the season. He's the Lord of every season of our life. He's King, and the world is a happy place when we accept his kingship, and we're a miserable people when we don't accept his kingship. Jesus came to mend the torn relationship between us and God, starting with people like you and like me. So the Magi here, this is the contrast, the Magi are accepting Christ's birth and are happy because of it. Like, this is great. He's here. Awesome. Herod, on the other hand, is resisting Christ's birth. And he will become increasingly miserable as he tries to construct his life in the way that fits him. It will actually be his demise. So he sends out the Magi with a command, "Go and search diligently for the child. When you've found him, bring me word that I may worship him." The Magi give Herod the benefit of the doubt here. They agree to the plan. They set out again. This time they go to Bethlehem because now they got it figured out. And as they walk out of Jerusalem, they see the star again. And their hearts erupt with this sort of joy. Why? Because this is not just a physical journey for them. This is not just a professional journey as astrologers. This is a personal quest. They want to find the king. And this journey is actually from the heart. It's an emotional and personal quest. They're not supposed to find Jesus because it's their job. They want to find the Christ because that's actually their desire. And they're like, wait a minute, this is way more than a professional pursuit. We're not just astrologers, we're going to become worshipers. And God's going to do an incredible thing in the Magi, even while Herod's life falls apart with one decision after another. There's no substitute, you know, for desire. Everyone does what they want. I mean, that's just kind of the reality of life. Our desire will lead us to do the things that we want to do. So whatever you did yesterday is what you wanted to do, right? That's just how it is. We do what we want to do. Our desire will lead us to the thing that we desire. So what do you want? What do you want this Christmas? What do you really, 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 really want for Christmas this year? What do you desire? What are you after? What is the thing to end all things? Now, of course, there is no such thing, right? Because one thing leads to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. There is no one thing that we want. That's why it's tricky to answer the question. There's always the next thing. So you get the nice car, but you better get better insurance for that car. Right? You better get better tires, especially winter tires, for that car. Or you get the house, but you need some new upgraded furniture. You better build that patio, and the basement's unfinished. We better finish the basement. It's never going to end. You get the retirement, now you need new passions in life. What's the purpose of my life now if I'm not working? That's what I've heard. I'm not retired, by the way. I got at least 30 years to go. You're not done with me yet, all right? Christmas is not the offer of the next thing, the next present. Here's why Christmas is amazing. Christmas is the opportunity to no longer need the next thing, for no longer needing the next thing. Do you know what presents are included when Christ is born to us? Do you know what you have if you're a believer? Have you opened the gifts that God has given you? Because Christ is born King unto us, we have peace with God and are justified, made right by the Son. We're eternally loved. We're locked in the hands of the Father and the Son. We're given an inheritance kept in heaven for us, preserved. Unspoiled. We have a forever stream of God's favor on us because Jesus took all the reasons for God's wrath. When God looks at you, he sees his Son with unending, undying, everlasting love. Jesus took from us all the reasons for fear. All those things have been taken from us. Christmas is, and the list goes on, by the way. Christmas is a strange time, I think, for Christians because Christmas does not bring to the surface all the things that we don't have, which is, I think, what our commercial world wants us to believe. You don't have this, you don't have that. I mean, how many catalogs have you gotten this year? Or at least emails. Christmas is not about, oh, what do I not have? Christmas is all about remembering and bringing to the surface all the things we have already. Even if you didn't get one gift for Christmas this year, no, you got a lot of gifts for Christmas this year. You know Jesus, the gifts will keep on coming. He's the gift to end all gifts. He's the gift that you don't need to add to. No strings attached, no complications, no, and now I better get this. Christmas for the Christian is about bringing to the surface all that you have already. You maybe have a few people in your life who are difficult to shop for. I mean, my mom and dad, I try to buy presents for them. I never know what to get them, right? Well, all of us should be pretty difficult to shop for because all of us are just bursting already at the seams with the generosity of God. Every Christian you look at could be like, you know, you don't really need anything. We have God. When the Magi find the Christ child with his mother, they fell down, they worshiped him, they opened up their gifts, they gave Jesus their choicest presents of gold and precious ointments, not because these were Jesus' favorite things or Jesus was like, oh, thank you. No, because they were valuable to them. And there's a variety of symbolism related to the myrrh and the frankincense, and I think you can explore that a little bit, but I think Matthew's point in this is that we are to do what the Magi did. See Jesus as king. Jesus is king. That's the point of this story. Give him your very best. It's heaven's best for our best now. There's no real comparison, but this is how we now live since Christ has been born unto us. God, you gave us Jesus, now we give you ourselves. We give you our lives. That's what the Magi are showing us, I believe. When I give a gift to my wife, Melanie, I don't think to myself, wow, you know, you've done a lot for me this year, and we have our 18-year wedding anniversary tomorrow, actually. I think that's around 6,000 days. That's a lot of things, that amazing things that she's done for me in the last 6,000 days. I don't sum that up and say, okay, thank you for, you know, doing all these things for me. I want to repay you for all you've done for me. Here's a sweater. Oh, it doesn't fit. Oh, darn it. I mean, that's no payment. That's not a payment. You don't pay someone back for that. No, it's a thank you. It's a response. It's an acknowledgement. It's not a joke. I mean, it's a gift, but in comparison to what she means to me, it's like nothing. The sweater? What is it? It's an acknowledgement that I can't repay her. I can't buy her love. There's no payback for that. In the same way, here's the deal with our lives. We do not repay God. That is impossible. We worship our Lord. That's the best response we can give to Christ being born, is the gift of worship to God. And the main way we do that is through offering up our little thrones, our little lives, our bodies, our minds as living sacrifices to God day after day. We become who we were created to be, worshipers of God, the newborn King. So what do we do the day after Christmas? We do the same thing we do on the day of Christmas and every other day. We worship the Christ, we elevate him, we raise him up, the one born King of the Jews, born King of me, born King of you. Let's thank him now and pray. God, thank you that you have come, Lord, that we can spend our lives, God, pouring out our worship to you. And I pray that we would be a lot more like the Magi than we would be like King Herod, that our hearts would be soft and tender. And Lord, that's a work that you do, because I do believe that every child born in this world is born not accepting you, Lord. But you come in your grace and you open the heart. And Lord, I thank you that you've done that with so many of us here, Lord. And if there's anyone here who has not accepted you and received you, God, I do pray for that, Lord. And I know that this community is full of people who love and adore and worship a lot of things, Lord, that aren't you. And God, give us the eyes to see and the hopefulness, Lord, that you can open the eyes of many, many more. Future City Church is just getting started. And Lord, I pray for this church family right here, the people in this room, God, that our hearts would be on fire, Lord, with affection and love for you, that we would be like the Magi. If we got to travel hundreds or thousands of miles, we'll do it, Lord, to see you. But help us just to consistently and faithfully just love you. For parents in the room to show and demonstrate to their kids that you matter. And God, for the youth in our church, that they would be captivated by you and that you would be their king right off the bat. Lord, be our Lord this season. In your name we pray. Amen.